You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now is someone who always brings me plenty of joy, and I feel so uplifted after I've spoken to him, is Lee Taitua. How are you, Lee? Kia ora from the Pātaka Institute.
Kia ora, Marie. Kia ora, New Zealand.
Good to have you back. There's a bit going on at the moment out there, and you've been up to a whole heap of stuff, but I wanted to get you back on because there's, been a bit of fractiousness out in the cultural space. We thought we would cover off some of those elements today. We've talked a lot about economics before, but we're going to talk about culture and politics more today. Kotahitanga is something, if you go to the Pātaka Institute, you have it on your homepage right at the top there. It's a word that most everyday people don't understand what the meaning of it is, but it's an incredibly powerful word and powerful concept. So let's start there.
Yeah. Kotahitanga means unity of all people. I couldn't think of anything more important at today and this time of just division, not just in New Zealand, but across the world. A vision of unity is, for me, the only solution. But I'm pleased to say it's an old one, is that my kaumātua, that's what they felt the purpose of being Māori was to be a unifying force, was to bring people together. And so that's what kotahitanga means. Kotahi means literally the number one, kotahi. And kotahitanga means unity, together. I couldn't think of anything more important for us to talk about, Marie, is that it's in the land, it's in our people, but if I can add to that, my kaumātua stood for kotahitanga not more than two or three generations ago. At that time, it was unity of the tribes. I believe now in our time, in 2024, kotahitanga is unity of all people, all people together.
Mm. So if you were to listen to legacy media, and certainly listen to those who claim to represent Māori in Parliament, they would say that kotahitanga is, for them, that old thing, representative of bringing just Māori together. There is a division that's been drawn. They claim the division is coming from the likes of the bills coming in from the ACT Party and such. But can some of this blame be placed at their feet in terms of creating a perception of division amongst Māori and non-Māori in New Zealand right now?
In any culture, there are always those who benefit directly from division. And so if we look at who benefits from disunity and division, they always tend to be the ones with the biggest voice. So they tend to be the ones out the front. But when you take a look underneath the iceberg, underneath, you'll see that most people just want to get on and just want to feed the kids, pay the bills, live a good life, get on with their neighbours in the community. But the divisiveness is always there out the front. This is not just to do with Māoridom. I think this is in any culture. You always get those who are projecting their own best interests. And if you can create a division, then you'll get hired to bring it together again. And so you reference the Māori Party. If you drive the fact that you and your people are better or, have more rights than others, then you're always going to get another group come back against you. That in itself, by just saying we're entitled more, straight away creates the division. So there's a level of humility required in kotahitanga. And in any society, it requires sacrifice. That's what's absent here. My ancestors, and when I mean ancestors, I don't just mean hundreds of years ago. I mean the last two or three generations. Things have changed in these last two generations, where the drive when I grew up was for our communities to get along, to work together, to trade. That's why I got into economics young. I was put on scholarship with my tribe in Waikato to look at economics because we saw that as a unifying platform. As I mentioned before, Kingi Tawhiao established the first Reserve Bank in New Zealand. He understood the way to get productivity and the way to raise living standards is to commune, is to work with each other. And so kotahitanga was there, but in the history books, depending on what you want to teach at the university, if you're a woke tenured professor, you don't want to teach unity. It's boring. You want to teach divisiveness. And that's what's come out of the academy in the last 30 years. It's much hotter. It's much more, you get more tenured professorships, you get more chairmanships, you get more political traction by showing some group to be ripped off. Now, that wasn't there when I grew up. What was there was a community in which our kaumātuas were always talking about how we bring the people together, whether it's at home or at the marae or wherever, but bringing people together. Ko taitanga is the foundation of it all, but the division is always there because it's always much more convenient. You don't have to have any responsibilities in division. You just have to claim rights. But ko taitanga requires humility and it requires an acceptance of responsibility, personal responsibility. And that's what was promoted to me and promulgated to me as a youngster, was that our true role as Māoridom is to bring people together on this land where our greatness will be measured in unity, not division. That there was rattled home with me when I was young, but it's, as you can see here today, and that's why we're talking about it, it's almost entirely gone. There are no forces for unity that I can see amongst Māoridom that you can see. But the good news for our audience is that just like you, the majority of Māori see greatness and unity and productivity and working together. So there's good news underneath it all. It's just that we're always responding to what's out in the open.
So Marty and I talk about that a lot on Media Matters because we often are talking to people who are in that echelon. You know, they are just, they're getting along. They're working, they're trading, they're looking at the likes of the, what you know, using inverted commas, the kōhanga generation, self-proclaimed, you know, from Taikūra Ferris.
That's right.
And they are saying, ugh, we don't want a part of that. We're just going to get on and continue to farm, trade, work, raise our whānau, our families, and, you know, continue being. Is there then a responsibility, though? I mean, you're somebody who works, lives, and has been raised in this environment. From those Māori to actually finally go to the likes of Te Pāti Māori, to the likes of the activist class in the Labour Party and the Green Party, and go, Tai ho, this is enough. We've had enough of this. Pull your heads in. Because that's what happened in my grandfather's day. But it seems to not be happening now, or is it, and we're not hearing about it?
Here's another piece of good news. I can see through all of this. Ko tahitanga is actually winning. That's why the activists are getting louder and like demanding in their own parliament. That's how you can tell you're winning. It's a, ko tahitanga is a slow, steady, deliberate course. And that a good barometer of the success of ko tahitanga is the increase in fringe groups who think they represent everybody else. And so it depends on how you look through it. Now, if you've been at it for as long as I have and seen it as a youngster, you can tell who the liars are. You can tell them straight out in the open. They have no reason to bring people together. And they even know underneath, inside themselves, that they're wrong. However, what's different now is because now we're talking intergenerationally. We have kids have come through kōhanga, kura kaupapa, the secondary school movement, and often to universities. No matter what you say to them, that they have just been immersed in that. So the antidote for me isn't saying, oh, no, you're wrong. You just move on. What they require is attention. They require political attention. They require their votes. They require all of those political elements. So these are people who are not brought up to do the basics in life. These are your woke academic class. They're not your regular everyday working people. But because they're so vocal, it looks like to the rest of the country that they're the majority. They're not. Mm. I would say well over 95% of Māori couldn't give a damn about politics.
Mm.
And they couldn't give a damn about, you know, whoever. They're just saying, Oh, look, I'll vote for whoever's going to help me pay the bills.
Yeah.
You don't hear any economic programs coming out of the Māori Party. All you hear is everything's everyone else's fault, so vote for me and I'll save you. But now we're talking about young people, young, the even millennials are a bit older now, but I'm talking about Gen Z. The Gen Z youth, my eldest is 25, Gen Z know nothing but this. They've grown up in this wokeness now for the last generation or two. So they've got nothing to compare it to. But however, we're talking about the old kaumātua to go taihō. They all know I'm right. There wouldn't be any kaumātua across this country who would disagree with what I'm saying. But they have no voice. Can you imagine an old kaumātua standing up and saying, "Ah, taihō, taihō, no, no, let's work with the Pākehās. Let's work together." What would happen to them? They'd just be seen like Joe Biden and put out to pasture. They're not on the program now. A lot of people have messaged me to say, how come Peter Sharples and Tariana Turi aren't coming along, Flavel, all of them, and denouncing these Muppets? Where are they? They don't want to do that. They don't want to end their life in their elderly years having to fight a battle. And so our kaumātua are tired. They just want their mokos to be fed, stay out of jail, all that sort of stuff. That's all they want. So, however, I'm in between those generations. So I can get on this radio network here and I can say what I like, but our kaumātua, man, if you come out against them, they may not drop their mokos off to you for the holidays.
You see, that's the difficulty, because you brought up a couple of things there, and one of the things I'd written down was around self-agency. So you have people like Alan Duff, who always talked about Māori self-agency. John Tamahere, back in the day, used to know a thing or two about Māori self-agency before critical race theory became a much easier grift and you can make more money from. So he sort of switched to that camp. So how do we then get these kids, as you said, these Gen Zers, but these new Zoomers that are coming on, so my kids' age, because my kids are just that bit younger.
Yeah.
How do we then give them that sense of self-agency to be able to see what's going on? Now, I see it working in a faith-based environment. And we don't have faith, but my kids are at a faith-based school. I see it when I've spoken to Hana Tamaki and the work that they've been doing within their community, which of course is all centered around faith. You see it in the traditional faiths. My kids are at Catholic school and I see that amongst the kids there. But if you've got kids that don't have a core like that, whether it be the marae or faith, how do you save them and how do you teach them self-agency away from these ideologues?
Our youth, when I say our, I think it's important to say your own. Everybody can have an opinion about everybody else's kids. But in my view, if your kids aren't lined up and if your kids aren't doing what's right, I'm not going to listen to you. If you look back at home and what's going on at home, and that's what you have, and you have now committees and trust boards. And that's the thing, I suppose, I've got to say to our Pākehā audience out there. Don't think that the chairman of an iwi trust board or a runanga is some sort of chief. And so we talk about, there's a lot of Māori that are against democracy and they talk about co-governance, but none of these trust boards and runangas use anything but democracy. They vote for their leaders. Okay, so but when I was young, there was no voting. There was no money involved in it either. All of my kaumātuas were volunteers. So there was no money in pushing some sort of agenda, which meant you could think independently. You could look at a situation and say, nah, that's not right. I'm going this way. If you don't want to come this way, well, kei a koe, up to you. Whereas now the political process now requires an antidote to this. There is required a movement for unity that is able to drive in that political process now, because that's where this is coming from. There are people who actually believe that these elected officials are somehow chiefs, and they're not. They're just the noisy ones. So there has to be a responding argument as to say, okay, if you're going to use political power and grants it for your iwi trust boards and stuff to convert people, where, for instance, if you don't teach this at your kohanga or your kura kaupapa, you're going to lose your funding. So someone needs to come along and say, oh, no, 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 you can have as much funding as you like to go any way you want. But if it ends up with your kids in jail, it ends. So there's no countervailing force coming back and saying, okay, let's stop here and compare our good intentions with reality. So that's what's happened is the last 30 years now, we have a corporate vision of what's Māori. That's based around dollars, that's based around grants, it's based around votes. Whereas when I grew up, My father, for instance, was the chairman of our marae, and he was just said by the kaumātua that you're the chairman now. Yeah, and the people accepted his leadership, and they knew if he stuffed up, then he was gone. Because if he stuffed up, he wouldn't be able to go in and argue at some committee, because the leadership was ingrained in you, you know, that you had a purpose more than just to please a small group. Your role there was to try and bring, to create a better life, right? And the experiment has been that only comes through kotahitanga, that only comes through unity. If there are factions and if there is like division, nothing good comes from it. But today, though, is that what's required isn't just, this can't be turned around just by sitting at home and just whinging at the news or just going, whinging at those Muppets that so-called represent you. There's got to be something more than that. There's got to be a call for unity and to just move forward with unity. That requires sacrifice. So for there to be unity, it's not going to be achieved unless you give up something. And I suppose that's the basis behind why you talked about faith, why so many of my ancestors chose Christianity. Because at the heart of the Judeo-Christian belief is sacrifice. That the center of the whole thing was a sacrifice. So you got to give up some of your desires, some of the things that you would like. And if we all did that, then that common ground of kotahitanga can be found. But today there is no sacrifice. None of these political leaders pay a price for being wrong. Okay, yeah. So they may not get enough votes, but they still get to go and get a job on their trust board or some bloody Indigenous group or some other NGO. They pay no financial price for getting things wrong. That's why they just keep going over and over and over again. So there's no sacrifice there. Never trust anybody who doesn't pay a price for being wrong.
There's something, I mean, you're from an economic background and I've spent a lot of time in business and marketing. And there's a saying that if you don't pay for something, you are the product. Do you think with all of this, with particularly this money that's gone around, that Māori haven't realised that they are now the commodity? They have become the product, especially in recent years.
When I came of age and I left home at 17 to go up to uni, and I was perplexed at the time that the chiefs who were running my iwi at the time, this was before the treaty settlement, we were the first iwi to sign a treaty settlement back in 95. Now this was before then, so I started in 93, right? So prior to all the settlements and all the dollars and all the corporations and the land returns and the rivers and stuff, prior to all of that, I got to see leadership in that environment where there was nothing. They didn't have any assets. I saw the difference between there and then a stark change once the first settlement was signed. Now, I was young at the time. Something I always remembered was, why did my chiefs and kaumātua at the time say, look, so you know the karakia and we got the reo and all that, you know, we don't want you doing that. We want you to learn science and economics. And I'd wondered why. They really, you know, and they talked about the importance of you accessing, gaining Pākehā knowledge, right? And to be an expert at that. And I recall them saying that. That's not so you can seek revenge. That's just so you can exemplify excellence. We aren't the repositories of all knowledge across the world. For our people to grow, we need knowledge from all across the world. So they were very universal in their, not globalist, but very universal in their thinking. You know why, Marie? Because there was a level of humility in them. And that came from their spiritual beliefs. They believed in something bigger than their own ego. They believed in God. I remember a woman who I greatly respect, Te Ariki Nui, remember saying to us, a cohort of youngsters, and that's why I'm ready to say this to our Gen Zers now. I'm repeating what my kaumātuas and my queen said to me when I was a young man, when I was a kid at the time. She said, ko tahi noi ho te atua. That means there is but one God for all people. There's that term, ko tahi. Ko tahi noi ho te atua. And the faith that I was taught at the time, which is the Pai Māori Rea, I've shared that karakia with you before, came out of her purpose at that time, was not just to unite all the tribes, but to unite the world. to bring people together. And so she was trying to instill that into my generation. But I've got to say, it's, and I look back at my cohort at the time, and I look across them now, across the country, and I go, did you not hear what I heard her say? Why am I so different? Why am I talking about this when we hardly hear this? There'd be Pākehā people out there going, man, this fella Lee's talking about some alien concepts here. They were not alien. They were the mainstream. This was orthodoxy. Unity was orthodoxy in Māoridom. Okay, and the idea of everyone working together. So again, to achieve kotahitanga, they realize it's more than just the doing part every day. There's what I call whakapono, which is belief, good faith, not bad faith, good faith, trust, integrity. I can recall my grandfather saying when we signed the treaty settlement, I remember him saying to me, it was the 2 years, he passed away in 93. So this was 2 years prior to the settlement. He was one of our kaumātua, guiding our chiefs through the settlement process. His insistence on in the treaty settlement wasn't the land and the rivers. We were very passionate about that. He said the apology is the important thing.
Mm.
Because the apology comes from a level of sacrifice and it comes from belief. He said it's the apology, because the apology then heals the perpetrator, right? And it heals everybody. And so his vision was, right, now we got the apology, now get on with it. Learn the science, learn the economics, be productive, put kai on the table, leave the people for good. This stuff that I'm talking about here today just seems so alien, doesn't it?
So then with those settlements, having been someone who was going through the academy just prior to those and being aware of when they were happening at Painui.
Yeah.
Do you think that this activism has been one of the unexpected consequences of those settlements? Because from those settlements, more young Māori were able to go to university. I know a lot of scholarships were set up. You and I are of a similar age, and I know that I have immediate family that used scholarships through our iwi to get through university. Yeah. So do you think that's been one of the unexpected consequences of those settlements, is that unfortunately these young people that have entered into the academy have gathered these ideas?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Now, I think what needed, looking back, it's easier to have hindsight now, but if I was the chief then, for me here now, I would have put another caveat on top of our scholarships, because my chief at the time, Sir Robert Mahuta, was insistent on was getting an education. So the important aspect of the settlement for him was to establish educational grants. I look back on that, and you know, that's the one thing I can say that's a great aspect of the treaty settlement process, was to invest in capability development. Okay, but what I would do now in hindsight, with all due respect to my chief, Sir Robert, I would have said, Sir Robert, you should have asked more questions and said, what are they going to learn at university, right? Because back then, the academy, it was woke then, but not like it is now. Because I did science and economics too. There's very little grey area in economics and science. I didn't pick up on the wokeness that early, but I've been 30 years now in the academy as a former dean and head of school. So I've seen where this virus set in place. So the intention was, we'll invest in our people to raise their capability, send them off to the polytechs and unis, and that's all great. But we should have followed through and said, and by the way, we want you to learn this, 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 and this, not that, that, and that. I went into it with rose-tinted glasses, and that's why I focused on education too. After I got out of my research career pretty quickly, I got into teaching science and economics. And so that's where I saw the faculty coffee lounge talk go on, where, if we can change this curriculum and get more Māori in here, we'll get a tenured professorship faster and we'll get more funding. And right, and then if you get a government in there that supports that sort of thing, whereas my kaumātua's back then would have said to me, and me myself too, I don't want any hand-ups. I'm not some decrepit.
Mm.
I want the hard science. You know, I want to work hard myself. You know, so I can recall starting at university in 1993, and when I enrolled in the hostel where I lived, we had the option, would you like to live on the Māori floor or not? And I said no.
Mm.
I was put on the Māori floor anyway. And when I got there, and the RAs were there, and I remember them announcing it. This is me, I was only 17, 18. They announced that the first night when we started university there, some of you chose not to be on the Māori floor, but we put you here anyway, because that's where you're supposed to be. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, wow, oh, okay. And you know what? It was seductive. Because you know what? When you're an 18-year-old kid and you're made to think, oh, you're some sort of special candidate here. We need you over here. And I fell for it. It was seductive. And I spent the first 2 or 3 years of my university career, I lost the true values that I grew up with of hard work. You know, not shunning like handouts, to be humble, to sacrifice. I lost that, and it took me a few years to get it back again, where I just fell into that trap of, hey, bro, you know, we're special over here now. We can, you know, you can do this and do that now. And so it wasn't only until when you grow up, you know, you get a bit older and you go through your career, and I realized just how seductive that is. To tell a young kid, you know what? The world owes you something. You're special. You come over here. Don't worry, you know, and then to start feeding you propaganda is to say, no, you realize you're a victim. And I go, oh, am I? Because I had good parents, so I didn't have to want for anything. And that's what I wanted to say. But if I said that in a cohort around me where you've got your professors saying, No, you got history wrong, Lee. You're oppressed. And I remember saying to myself, hang on. I remember my great-grandparents, I don't recall them saying that they were oppressed. And they lived at a time closer to colonization. So the oppression must have skipped a couple of generations and landed on my lap. And I never thought about just how incoherent that is. It's a non sequitur, as I teach.
Mm.
It just doesn't make sense. But I fell for it because I was young. Now, you take a look at the Māori Party. You take a look at the ones out the front. They're all young, but they have a few older ones in there stirring the pot. So, and they talk about that too. They talk about, well, look, the next generation, you know, Māori are going to lead the country because they actually, and that's what they rely on. They rely on feeding young people's minds with the suppression story. And I'm here to say to the country, it is very, very seductive for a young person because I went through it myself. And so what we need now is a counter-revolution of personal responsibility, striving for unity, all those values that I grew up with, and that's what I've decided to do.
Well, yes, we've segued into that. And, yeah, well, let's talk about that now, because I was about to say to you before we got started, do I need to book you into a psychologist, darling? Do you need your head read?
Yes.
Because you tell everybody what you have decided to do. Because I know you've been bouncing this idea around for a while.
Well, you know, when you get older and you go, well, I may not have that much time left. I want to do something where I can see some benefit. I've been in education for 30 years and I can see what it can do. And I've identified the source of the rot, you know, that comes out of the education system. And so I've decided to put my money where my mouth is and to form this revolution for unity, for kotahitanga again. However, it's based very much upon whakapono, my beliefs, that I've been talking about up until now, but it does depend on an economic revolution as well, because I don't believe kotahitanga can be achieved until people can feed themselves. You can't ask people to be personally responsible if it is financially and economically impossible. So it requires an economic forum too, and that's come out of my work with the Pātaka Institute, the need to teach economics and science. Because that's the basis behind any productive economy and any living standard, to raise a living standard. But I've realized too, out the front of that too, is required this counter revolution against all of this division. And so I'm forming a party called Unite New Zealand. UniteNZ.org is where I've put my policy proposals. So
one of those that I saw initially right off the bat, which was a big one to come out with, was the abolition of Māori seats. Talk me through that.
Yeah, I'll abolish the Māori seats in Parliament. The reason why is that those kaumātua I'm talking about, when we had those Māori seats, and there was a requirement for those Māori seats at one point, because there was it was illegal to even vote to be so there was a basic constitutional requirement to have that representation. But here's why I'm saying this. We do not have those kaumātua anymore. Those benevolent kaumātua that are about kotahitanga, those seats were never about division. They were about getting in there and creating more participation. So what my message to Māoridom out there and to New Zealanders, scrap the 7 Māori seats and win the other 116. I believe there's 116 Māori seats in Parliament. If you want to stand in them, but you're free to do so, present your policies that will raise everyone's standards of living, everybody, kotahitanga, and you could win all 116 seats.
Hmm.
So what I'm saying is that there's been a transition now where these seats have been used to divide the country. They were established to try and unite the country, and that's why they must go. But in exchange of that, there's got to be a quid pro quo, right? I've got to offer something else to say, 116 is more than 7. So win the 116. And if your belief, if your drive is to unify, you'll win them. If you, like I say in one of my posts on X the other day, come forward and stand as candidates, Māori, in all of the seats and present your policies to reduce the cost of living, and you'll win. So I believe that Māoridom can be a source of good ideas, a source of innovation, a source of unity by raising everyone's living standards. But at the moment, these seats are used for the exact opposite. My policy is quite simple, is that all I've got to do is lead you in the opposite direction to the Māori Party, and that would be the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, I look at it in the sense that if you can have a Māori trans woman win a conservative rural seat in a general electorate, anybody can win a seat in a general electorate.
It also is relevant for local government. There's no need for Māori wards. Every ward's a Māori ward if you've got the right policies. If you've got policies that'll cut people's rates, I mean, they'll be jumping over themselves to vote for you.
Mm.
Why? Because you never hear these unifying policies come from the Māori Party and also the Labour Māori Caucus, the Greens. You don't hear, all you hear is one group's a victim, the other one's the oppressor. It's just Marxism. That's what I'm saying, is it's important now to draw a clear line in the sand. But there's a reason why I want to abolish the Māori seats. It's simple. They don't work.
So then why not look, because, I mean, to be effective in politics, you've got to be in the tent. Now, to be fair, you've now launched this party with, you know, time, but it takes time to get things across the line. Why not take your ideas and see if you could infiltrate or collaborate with an existing party that's in existence? Why did you not consider that?
Yeah, everyone said, hey, bro, don't split the vote. Go and talk to Winnie and go and talk to David and all that, you know, talk to the centre-right parties. They don't understand monetary operations. It's as simple as that. So the point of difference between what I'm saying here with my policies and theirs is purely economic. Social policy, very similar, of course. However, it's the economic insights that they don't have. And so that's what I'm saying. And so underneath the kotahitanga, underneath unity, there's got to be a proper economic policy, and they've all got it wrong. And that's not just ACT New Zealand First, and that's both parties. In fact, I see Labour and National as no different. That's a uniparty, in my view. Nothing's gotten any better under Labour or National because of these economic insights that they have backwards. That's what I'm seeing as requiring more time. Is everybody, I don't think anybody, I mean, who would disagree with unity? Only those who want division. That's an easy sell.
I know, but of course, politics.
But what's more difficult is the economic policies, and that's why it's come out of education. It's come out of my observations the last 30 years, and what I've published on the Hataka Institute website. It's those insights that separate me from Winston and Shane and David and all the rest of them. And so that's why I've got to take this. The first step in this campaign is an educational campaign. People have to unlearn a lot of things. So here's my commitment to the to those listening now. I guarantee you the economy will not improve under this government because they don't understand what I understand. You can be as hopeful as you can. I put a poll out yesterday on my Twitter that said, are you financially better off under this coalition government? And I gave the options, yes or no different. Then the third option was, how dare you ask? Because there's some who don't even like to be asked. And then the fourth option was, no, but at least Cindy's gone. So if you add up the ones who said no different and those who said no, but at least Cindy's gone, it's over 80%. So people are actually putting their political ideology ahead of paying the bills. You know, they're saying, oh, look, I'm no better off under this government financially, but at least it's not woke. That's the real thing that's going to take time, Marie, not the vision of unity. Mm-hmm. It's this mentality that people will not change until the change changes them. It's just like, oh, no, it's going to be great and great and great until it's not great.
Right. So then I'm playing devil's advocate, Lee, because we need to toughen you up for this political journey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ask me the hard question.
For argument's sake, if you're needing to, say, win a political seat, like in your area, like if you were standing in Te Kuiti, for argument's sake, you've got to convince a certain number of voters, say, I don't know what the numbers there would be, but say 10,000 people about your unity in order to get you into Parliament, or 5% to get you over the threshold. Now, we know that 5%, that is a very hard ask. It's only been done once, and it was done this last year with Winston. And that was part of the reason, I think, that carried that, is that Winston learnt around the Freedom Network, and that was part of the learning. So that's why my question is in terms of going alone, wouldn't it be easier to educate a caucus of a political party like New Zealand First, like the ACT Party, like, I don't know, Vision New Zealand, all the new conservatives, convince a caucus of an existing party with an existing structure than trying to convince 10,000 electors to vote you as an MP?
Yeah. Let's welcome Winston Peters, Shane Jones, David Seymour, all of them to come on your show, and I'll debate them out in the open as to why they should join my party. Because I'll be able to convince the country, no matter what they say, your cost of living is not coming down. And that's the key here. So I could try and stand in the seat. That's the worst thing to do, I think. You know why? Because those other big parties will just swallow you up. My vision isn't for some electorate. My vision is for the entire country. Unite New Zealand, not just the King Country electorate or something.
Mm.
But however, this is what I think would be success. If I gave all those other parties a moment of pause to review their economic policy. If I was able to convince the country, listening now, is to say, question me, ask why my economic program is different to theirs, and how I'll cut your cost of living and they can't. But now the issue around the timing of it is that people won't pay attention to this, what I'm saying here now, until probably the day of the election. You know, so between now and 2026, I've got a chance to say I'll take on any of those other party leaders and show you that their economic policy is not only wrong, but backwards, including their approach to monetary policy, the RBNZ, the Reserve Bank.
And we've talked about that in previous interview, yeah.
The other thing too is that because it sounds so impossible, I think that's what's endearing about it. People are going, oh, this guy hasn't got a chance. People got pissed off at me too. Say, all you're going to do is split the vote, bro. Just go and join New Zealand First. I said, I would if they had proper economic policy.
But you could teach them proper economic policy.
Precisely. And that's what we're doing here. I'm hoping they're listening. But I don't have them on speed dial, and they're not going to pay attention to me until New Zealand starts paying attention to me. So that's why I'm here on RCR, to say we've got economic policy backwards, specifically monetary policy. I'm here to show you why. And none of those parties can get this right. I can. So that's why I'm here. I mean, if I could have them all on speed dial and say, you know, David, all you got to do is just say to the RBNZ, restrict them to a permanent 0% interest rate, and that'll stabilise prices. Where you go? But do you think they're going to listen to me? No, because they would have to admit they're wrong. They would have to say, you know, Lee, you're right and we're wrong. They ain't going to do that. And so if I went to an AGM of one of those political parties and stuck my hand up and said, hey, bro, look, here's a better economic policy. Unless the rest of the country hears it first, these guys aren't going to adjust. Okay, so that's what I'm saying to the rest of the people out there. Ask me the hard questions. Keep sending them into Marie. Keep saying, how come the economic situation is not going to improve, but this know-all Lee's got all the ideas?
One of the things I always love about you, Lee, is your confidence. So if anyone is going to tackle this, it will be you. Now, before we go, I want to get your opinion, your thoughts on something, because we've always finished our interviews with a karakia, which I greatly enjoy. And it's from the heart. You explain it. It's very much you. Now, one of the controversies floating around at the moment within the public sector is about the use of compelled karakia at the beginning or end of meetings or in environments or in workspace. Now, I look at that particularly if it's compelled and not natural and organic and from the heart, is nothing more than using something that is so beautiful as a virtue signal. What are your thoughts?
I entirely agree. The term Māori means natural, normal, clear, intelligible, and freely. If you are at work today and you're listening to this and you feel required to stand there and listen to someone do a karakia or inoi, and they'll often say, I'm hearing too in the media, oh no, karakia is not a prayer, it's just a chant, so you can do it, right? That's a lie. All of it's a lie. All of it is a spiritual base. And if you feel inside your heart that you're being compelled to forced to, and they may not, and they won't tell you this because they'll say, you know, here's a suggestion. But when it's your boss, you know, that's not a suggestion, that's an order. So no one should ever make you participate or learn or do karakia or inoi. And don't listen to these woke so-called experts, these Māori experts out there. They're liars. It's all lies. The only way you know if it's the truth is in your heart. And if you feel it's right, you do it. In fact, I encourage you to do it. But if you don't, you walk out. Okay? Under my government, nobody will be required to participate in any of that unless they want to. Now, if you do and you want to learn, that if that comes from your heart and not just your politics, or you want to get a promotion, you will find and feel a beautiful feeling inside you. And I can attest to that. But it must come from inside your heart. Never let anyone use this so-called tikanga to change your heart. It's your heart that's important. I know there'll be people out there that'll be going, ooh, that's a different, yeah. This guy sounds different to everybody else. So I'm telling you now, New Zealand, if someone requires you because of your job for you to be forced to be involved in anything to do with anything Māori, then it's not natural. It's not free. It's not clear and intelligible. And I'll stand up for you. You just ring me up and I'll turn up to work there, right? And I'll have a look at these fellas karakia and show them what they're doing and show you what they're doing. But for it to be real, and this is why I'm saying, I grew up at a time where you cannot lie about this. You can make it put a political veneer across the front of it. But if you lie about this, it'll destroy you inside. And that's what I believe has happened to these generations of young people. They've been destroyed from the inside out, where they just see these things of sacredness, whakapono, these things of sacredness as just some way to beat down on someone else, whether it's the reo, karakia, inoi, or anything, haka, all that sort of stuff. And I hope you can hear the tone in my voice, New Zealand. You're being lied to out in the open, and I'm telling you the truth, unless you feel it in your heart. But I've seen people, and I hope I'll put this forward in our karakia today. This is not a performance. I'm trying to share with you my heart. And that's the leadership we need. We need people with heart who are honest. They'll tell you the truth. Before I do a karakia, I also want to do something else. I think it's important. And I'll raise my hand, even though you can't see me on radio. I'm raising my hand. Marie can see me. I'm raising my hand, and I'll say this. I, Liel and Taituha, do solemnly swear to tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. That's my first policy.
Well, there you go. So tell us what's from your heart today. What karakia do you have? Because it's always so beautiful. So what have you got for us today?
Look, for me, there's only one karakia, and there's only one inuit. It's my own faith, pai marire. And the term pai marire means pai is good, ma is a direction or coordinate, and rire is into the unknown. So it's to have the faith and the belief to progress, to move forward into the unknown. New Zealand, the way we move forward is together, ko tahitanga, in unity. So my purpose is to unite New Zealand, not to divide New Zealand. And so regardless of the words you hear me say here, again, it's the important thing is that it's what you feel inside your heart. If I'm able to arrest you right now, to cause you to stop in your life right now, to feel something inside your chest, then that's my job, is to say, stop and feel and tell the truth. When I say this to you, it's more than a performance. No government should ever try and replicate this. No one can replicate this. Either you have faith or you don't. And so I hope as I chant these terms to you, I'm saying, pai marire, to know the correct direction forward. And I say, rire, rire ho, rire into the unknown above, rire into the unknown below, and ho is the angle that brings those together. Then I say, tō tiakina maramatanga e te atua. So, ko tahi noi ho te atua, there's only one God of us all, and that's why we're able to unite. We can come together under one mantle. So, ko tahi noi ho, say, tō tiakina maramatanga e te atua, your guiding knowledge, your guidance, God. Ki tō mātou kingi, and for me, this karakia was established by Kingi Tāwhia, the second Māori king, and now holding his mantle here today is King Tuheitia. But I also called under the banner of unity, King Charles. Let's bring these cultures together, not apart. Ki tō mātou kingi, ki ngā tīnana i māuiwi ana. Ki ngā tīnana, all those people who are sick and afflicted now, there will be people listening to me now who are feeling sad, who have maybe lost somebody, who are feeling not only sick, maybe in body, but in their mind and in their heart. We say māuiwi, so they are sick and afflicted. So we think about them, and I'm talking to you. Ki ngā tīnana i māuiwi ana. Tai noa ki a mātou katoa i te rangi nei. Down to all of us here today. So for this moment right here, all of you listening to me, I'm guiding you in unity. You're all listening, and you're listening to what I'm saying. That's what it should feel like. We should feel like we're together, not compelled and forced to be together. So that's what I'll share with us today. Kapai, shall I?
Kapai, where you go.
All right. So my microphone tends to go in and out a little bit, whānau, because when I change the pitch of my voice, it goes a bit out. So long as you feel the intent and you can feel what I'm saying, the understanding of the words is secondary, so long as you can feel what I'm saying. My love to all of you, New Zealand, let's unite. Let's come together. Let's resist these forces of division. Let's sort out so our living standards can increase. Let's sort our economy out. I'm putting forward to you all today that those in charge have got no clue about how to turn the economy around, but we can come together and share better ideas about how to do it. That's my prayer to us all, to everybody. Tō tiakina maramatanga e te atua, ki tō mātou kingi,
Ki ngā tina nei mauiwi ana, tai no ki a mātou katoa, he te rangi nei ae. Nā te kororea, nā te kororea, nā te kororea. Rire, rire hau. Pai marire.
Kia ora, Lee. Thank you so much. It is such a beautiful karakia. Now, just to remind everyone, for those two websites, one for Unite New Zealand and the other for the Pātaka Institute, because there's some great resources on the Pātaka Institute. Like, for example, if you've got a young one looking for a job, you've got some brilliant resources for kids on how to get jobs if they're heading out to the world. So give us those websites again.
Yeah, so to get those educational insights, economic and science insights, is that my institute, Pātaka, P-A-T-A-K-A, institute.com, pātakainstitute.com. And I've launched this new movement for unity at unitenz.org.
Excellent. No, Kirali, it's always good to catch up. And of course, we always have things to talk about. We'll have you back at the show again soon, I am sure. Now, I don't want everyone to disappear. Today's politics morning here on Counterculture. Coming up next, I'm going to be catching up with the very own Cam Slater. There's been lots of feedback, both through his show, my show, and in general to the inbox around why we don't talk so much around RFK and lots of little nuances of the American political system. And there is a lot of nuance in the American political system. So we're going to go global now. We're going to go across and talk about US politics with Cam, and it will help you navigate what is going to unfold there in the coming months. So don't disappear. That's coming up here with Counterculture. And thank you very, very much again, Lee. It's always a pleasure.
Kia ora, Marie. Kia ora, everybody.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.